Hello, and welcome to the Good Fiction Podcast. Join us as we continue with Things That Charlie Did, Chapter 8. The graveside service flowed with emotion, just like the funeral's atmosphere was easily felt despite the language barrier. So too was the service at the cemetery. The same priest faced the casket in a single row of 10 neatly aligned folding chairs. Everyone else stood behind the chairs. When the priest was finished, a young man played a beautiful song on a guitar and softly sang. Charlie had never heard the tune before, but guessed it was some sort of religious hymn from the numerous Jesus Christos he had heard throughout the song's presentation. During the funeral, Charlie couldn't help but to notice the actions of Margarita Rosales. She was clearly upset and grieving the loss of Juan. She constantly fumbled with the turquoise stone that dangled at the end of her necklace. She wasn't wearing a ring. The matching necklace must have been some sort of "we're going steady" sort of thing. Made sense. But still, Charlie had a weird feeling about it. Regardless, he figured the thing to do would be to give the necklace to Margarita. He found himself wishing he had it to give to her right then, but he didn't. The pathway to the cemetery was well worn. The walk back was about a quarter mile with clearings on either side of the path. It being still early in the day, the temperature was pleasant in the mountain air. The crowd quietly pushed along, with only the occasional muttered comment by someone in a very quiet and respectful tone of voice. The walk would have been pleasant had it not been for the purpose they were doing it. Maria was sad, but trying hard not to bring Charlie down with her. Still, though, there were questions she wanted to ask him about finding the body. Once they had made it back to the trailhead, and the people had begun to go in different directions, she didn't hesitate to ask. "So tell me, how did this all come about? You finding the body, I mean?" Charlie went ahead and told her what had happened. She listened carefully as he explained how, by chance, he had stopped to keep the car from overheating and heard the voices, then the gunshot. He then told her about going into San Miguel and telling Mr. Garcia what had happened. From there, the explanation was about how the body had been found. He hadn't really wanted to talk about any of it at first, but after explaining everything to Maria, he felt better. It was as if a load had been lifted from his shoulders. "You didn't get off to a very good start, did you?" asked Maria. They were standing behind the chapel facing each other. The others had moved on. Charlie had his arms crossed on his chest. Maria toyed with her hair and repositioned her ponytail. "No, I guess I didn't," he said. "I've got to go back to work tomorrow and face those kids after this," said Maria. She looked off into the distance. "Didn't you tell me your school was here in Ciudad Norte?" "Yes, would you like to see it?" "Sure," said Charlie. Charlie wanted to see what a schoolroom in this part of the world looked like. "I'd love to," he finished with a broad smile on his face. Maria looked proud as she motioned for Charlie to follow. He found himself feeling compassionate toward her pride, dedicated and proud of her work. He really liked that and saw those as favorable attributes. "The school is back toward the gas station. It's easier to walk. Come on, I'll show you education, small town Mexico style." As they walked, Maria explained how the public and private schools differed in Mexico from the United States. She also explained how Ciudad Norte and San Miguel actually had been combined as far as school attendance was concerned. Charlie was impressed with Maria's technical knowledge of how the money worked in the schools and the actual instruction of students, too. He, of course, had no idea if what she was saying was correct, but it sure sounded impressive. There was no reason to doubt her. By the time she had finished with her explanation, they were at what apparently was the school, one of the few buildings that lined the dirt road. It, too, was two stories. White, peeling paint on the outside was all that could be seen as they walked up the 6 concrete steps to the heavy wooden double doors. "I think we're in luck," said Maria. She twisted the brass knob on one of the doors and it easily turned, revealing that the door wasn't locked. She pulled the door open and Charlie followed her inside, closing the door behind him. Once inside, Maria became very serious and took Charlie on a tour of the school. There really wasn't that much to it. They finished in her classroom. Charlie was able to fit his body into one of the very old wooden desks that were in the room. It was enough to break the tension of the day and allow both of them the chance to laugh. "I bet you were a good student." "You'd have to have been to end it up in college and then law school." "It wasn't bad," said Charlie. "Show me where Juan's at." Maria pointed to the next row of desks over and somewhere in the middle of the row. Charlie clumsily squeezed out of the desk he was in and got it right on the first try when he asked if he had picked the correct desk. "May I?" he respectfully asked, gesturing as if he wanted to sit down. "Sure, I don't see why not. In fact, look inside and pull some of his work out if you want. I suppose I should box it up and send it to his parents, don't you think?" asked Maria. The school desk squeaked as Charlie sat down. The tabletop jiggled a little and squeaked as well. Once seated, he reached underneath and pulled out a large stack of books, a blue binder and folders of assorted colors. Although worn, the stack of Juan's school desk contents was neat. It was easy to see that he was organized. The stack took 2 hands to handle, and Charlie set it on the shaky desktop, causing it to squeak again. "Charlie? Did you hear me? I'm sorry, what was that? I think maybe I should box that stuff up and give it to his parents. What do you think?" Yes, I'm sure they would appreciate that." Charlie began to thumb through some of the folders, looking at Juan's work. His handwriting was neat, both in Spanish and surprisingly in English as well. He was surprised to see that so much of the work was actually in English. Charlie said it in a tone of voice that indicated he wanted an explanation. "Yes, the kids want to learn English. By the time they get to me, they are fluent in both languages. Most people, other than the older people, speak and write English here." "They've had a good teacher," Charlie responded. He didn't look up, though, because he was still thumbing through Juan's work. "So what do you think?" she asked. "About what?" "What do you mean about what?" "What you're looking at. He was a good student. It's obvious, isn't it?" "Yeah, it's obvious," he responded. "Hard to believe a kid like this was shot execution style in the middle of the jungle." "Like I said, Charlie, you're not in California anymore," she responded. "What do you mean by that? Is it normal for teenage boys to be executed here?" "Well, murder is never normal," she said. "You talk about this, though, like you're okay with the fact it happened, even though I can tell you're very sad about it," said Charlie. "It's just there's nothing I can do," she responded. "What about Garcia? He's going to at least try to figure it out, right?" "He'll try, but..." Maria held her hands up and shrugged her shoulders. She wanted out of the conversation. It was obvious. "Can you take me back to San Miguel?" she asked. "Yeah, sure. You want me to help you box up this stuff first?" Charlie pointed to the stack of Juan's folders, books, and binder, now on top of the desk. "No, just leave it there," she said. "I'll handle it tomorrow." They left the school and walked back down toward Charlie's car. The streets were empty again. They slowly headed back towards San Miguel, and Charlie kept a close watch on the temperature gauge. After about 20 minutes or so, it became apparent that he was going to have to stop, so he did. He and Maria stood outside, and he leaned against the car while she sat on the trunk. The talk was more about the weather than anything else. Their small talk gave way to checking to see if the car's engine had cooled down enough to continue. It had, so they were on their way once again. Maria gently teased Charlie about his lack of thinking when he allowed the car rental company to rent him a car that wasn't quite what he needed for where he was going. The teasing didn't bother him. In fact, it felt good, and he felt good about the fact that Maria was getting comfortable enough with him to do that. He felt comfortable with her, too. They hadn't traveled more than a mile or two from where they had stopped when Charlie spotted something in the road. They were traveling uphill at about 30 miles an hour. The object was at the top of the hill. At first, he couldn't make it out. "Stop!" cried Maria suddenly. "What?" Charlie looked at her, then back at the object. Now he could see it was clearly a man. It was another 30 yards or so to the top of the hill. "Why do you want me to stop?" asked Charlie. "Do you know this guy? Does he need a ride?" "No, Charlie, listen to me. That's trouble up there," she said. The man was wearing camouflage pants and a black shirt. A black strap held an Uzi across his lower body. The strap had clips of ammunition attached to it. Once Charlie realized that what he was looking at was a soldier, he brought the car to a stop. "What should I do?" There was the slightest detection of panic in his voice. "Stop and slowly back up," she said. "Who is that?" He stopped the car, put it into reverse, and let off the brake. The car began to roll back down the steep hill so quickly that his foot had to remain on the brake. He also had to look over his right shoulder, then his left, alternating back and forth in order to keep the car in the center of the dirt and gravel road. It was then he realized there was absolutely no way to turn around. "So what am I supposed to do? Drive backward all the way to Ciudad Norte?" "Yes," she said. "You're kidding, right?" "Nope," she responded. "Who is that guy? What is he up to?" "Just get us out of here and I'll explain later." Maria kept her eyes on the man at the top of the hill. "I won't be able to do that," said Charlie. "Just keep going," she said. "I can't. There's another one behind us." "What?" Now Maria seemed to lose what little bit of calmness she had left. She was scared. Charlie stepped hard on the brake, causing the car to lunge. The sound of crunching gravel and dirt filled the air. The man behind them must have come out of the jungle. He certainly hadn't been walking behind the car. The man looked just like the soldier that stood at the top of the hill. He too had an Uzi strapped across his body with both hands on it. His camouflage-colored body was square to the road. He was closer, though. It may be only 20 yards away. It was easy to make out his black mustache and flat-top black hair. It was hard, though, to spend much of time letting what the guy looked like register with that Uzi strapped around his body. The man in front brought his hand to his mouth to help amplify his voice, although he was now at least 50 yards away. Maria and Charlie both could hear him hollering commands in Spanish. "What's he saying?" demanded Charlie. "He wants us to get out of the car. Do what he says." "Why don't we just keep going?" "Do what he says," repeated Maria, this time, though, through clenched teeth. He got the point. Her tone of voice was much harsher than he had ever heard it before, from the short time that he had known her, anyway. "Okay, so let's get out." He slowly opened his door, and Maria did the same. There were more commands being shouted now. This time, they were coming from two directions, the soldier in front and the soldier in back. Maria translated their commands as quickly and calmly as she could so as not to cause any false moves on Charlie's part. "Put your hands in the air," she calmly told him once they were out of the car. He did as she asked. "Face the car," she said, and he did as asked. Both men were now approaching the car, their hands gripping their machine guns. The man at the bottom of the hill made it there first, but kept at least a five-yard distance. The first man they had seen at the top of the hill was soon to follow. He didn't keep his distance, in fact, walking up to Charlie as he got within inches of his face. "I understand you like to wander around in the jungle, sticking your nose in other people's business," he said, in a thickly accented English. Charlie didn't respond. The guy was bad news. Whoever he was obviously was talking about Charlie finding Juan's body. If he knew that, he must know something about Juan's death. Despite the situation, his mind was sharp and working quickly. This is how good lawyers got to be good. Thinking fast on your feet could make the difference in winning or losing a case or a negotiation. His lawyering skills had prepared him for what seemed like a life and death situation. His gut instinct was to remain silent. The second soldier now approached. Charlie looked over his shoulder, only to hear him harshly say to turn back around. The guy's English was much better than the guy on the hill. "We really do want you to enjoy your stay here," he said. "Just write your little book and keep your mouth shut, okay?" asked the soldier. Charlie turned around, feeling much more bold than common sense should allow. "Look, I don't know who you think you are, but that's as far as he got before the butt of the soldier's Uzi slammed into his face, causing everything to go black. The last thing his eyes saw before he fell to the dirt road unconscious was a leather necklace around the man's neck. At the end of the necklace was a turquoise stone." Thank you for listening. Join us next time as we continue with Things That Charlie Did. I'm Rodney Mathers. Goodbye for now.